This is the order of battle!
Thanks for joining the Order of Battle podcast for another episode. Joel, Jason, and Sometimes A discuss collecting G.I. Joe, other 1/18 scale action figures, and in general, what sparks joy. It's a lot of things, but almost always toys. This is the Order of Battle podcast.
Out of all the guys I recorded with, I by far recorded the most with Merklein. And, you know, I only ended up editing him for maybe a week. We filmed for 2 weeks. So that tells you that ratio, how small that ratio is, relatively speaking. But we filmed the whole time he made Rotello. So we filmed for 2 weeks. But what I pulled out for him for the Art of G.I. Joe Digipack was just the Hasbro-specific experiences. And so, man, I just really went in there with in telling myself I'll come back for the other stuff for the Operation Recall disc.
Of course.
I kind of gave myself a break there.
The indulgence you've provided yourself with allowing all of these old guys to just work in their fashion and then capture all of it is incredible.
So I want to give credit where credit's due. I'm not the first person to think of this conceptually. You know, there's a lot of dying art forms out there. And when I was just a young video practitioner working for a video production company, I worked with a very small company in Raleigh, North Carolina called Murphy & Associates. They've since been bought out and renamed. But we worked on pharmaceutical education videos for the bread and butter to make our money, right? But in the other 50% of the time, roughly, we got to do PBS documentaries. And so that was just up to my boss. What was he passionate about? What was he interested in and invested in emotionally? And we would film with those types of people.
That's incredible.
It was a great experience. There, you know, there's pros and cons of everything, but that was the great part of it. Absolutely. One of the documentaries that we worked on, this was when I got my first regional Emmy, was because I was the editor, designer, animator, audio mixer, and everything on this documentary. It's called Continental Ohio. And it's about a small town named Continental Ohio. But it's about the letterpress and wood press and everything press operator that lived in that town. His name was Niall Statler. And when we filmed with Niall, he was in his 80s. And he was maintaining these very old linotype machines and letterpresses. And he was still publishing like the town newspaper. And he had been alive for so long. This was in 2002, 2003. He had been around, if you think about it, since the 20s. So he was there for the vaudeville traveling troops and everything. And he had just this expansive archive of old woodcut prints and letterpress stuff, linotype machine prints that trumpeted all these traveling troops coming around using the rail system, because Continental Ohio was a hub in this rail system that all these traveling troops traveled on. So they would stop in Continental Ohio and they would get all their publications done, and then they would move on to their next show. Recording with Niall Statler, running all this antiquated technology that, you know, like just a couple decades, it's going to be gone entirely. It felt important and it felt meaningful. And that's where I kind of came up with the idea of, okay, these guys did it in a way that it is not done anymore. If I can just inspire them to do it again and let me film with them, it'll be captured and not lost to time. You know what I mean?
I am going to interrupt you because I need to take a moment on that. I mean, everything comes from somewhere, and this is how you were inspired. That's fantastic. But moreover, I want to see that. And I have nothing to do with any of that. That just sounds incredible. But to then take that same idea from when you were a young man and you were at the behest of the guy running your company, and then to bring that forward into the thing you're passionate about, is what all of us want to do, all of us intend to do, but very few of us follow through on.
Well, I'm lucky that I've met these guys and built these relationships with them and been able to grow those relationships to the point that they trust me that I could even ask them to do something like this. You know, like I certainly, when I first met Ron and Kirk and Guy and those guys back in the 2013-ish, I didn't even bring cameras to their houses because I wanted to take baby steps with them and I wanted to grow the relationships organically and over time. And the last thing I wanted was to show up at their house with multiple cameras and lighting and tripods and steady cams. And, you know, so I waited a few years to do that. and then once the relationships were solid and COVID had hit, you know, March of 2020, I had shoots lined up for some of the banks I work for Google, for Duke University. And I had a lot of production lined up for that spring and that summer. And it all went away in 1 week in March of 2020. You know, we were already working on the hardcover. Chad Huckle was already working on all the remastered 82 to 85 stuff. And I knew that I had to get around to these guys again and do expanded interviews because I'd learned a lot since I had, you know, spoken with them nearly a decade earlier, about 7 years at that point. The more you learn, the more questions it raises, right? The more you learn about a topic, the more you get into the minutia of it, the more like refined and detailed your questions can be. So I wanted to travel around and film with them to get, you know, the content, the meat and potatoes of the book. And I just, you know, it had been long enough. I'd known all of them long enough that I thought, okay, now's the time to do video. I'm not using my video gear for any of my corporate clients because they're all scared of COVID now. And so what can I do with G.I. Joe that will complement this book? And that's why there's a digipack coming with it. That's the exact like birth of the digipack. And so instead of just doing sit down interviews, those are kind of boring sit down talking head interviews.
Yes.
What I like to do with my corporate clients, like if you go to Fidelity Charitable Donor Profiles, I've filmed all those. And so the Fidelity Charitable Donor Profiles, what they're really good at is we go and we film with these people. And yes, we do sit down interviews, but we also shoot a ton of B-roll with them doing different things throughout their day. And we mic them up and we capture what I call nat sound, like natural sound. You weave together sound bites while they're doing stuff with the B-roll while they're doing stuff. So sit down interviews are boring, right? They can be. And certainly you try to dress them up with cutaway footage and that can work. But what's more exciting and more interesting and what I try to do with my corporate clients is experiential interviews where you're doing something with them. You're going about their life and you're a fly on the wall. You're witnessing them being great at what they're great at or doing what they're passionate about. And so I wanted to do that with the G.I. Joe guys. So I said, hey, what if every one of you helps me design a figure from scratch and we document it from start to finish and I film with all of you as you do it? And they all agreed, man. I'm just really lucky, really blessed that these guys, you know, they tend to buy into my my excitement for them and the work that they did, and they want to help me to, you know, help them document it. They all said yes, and that's, you know, that's the birth of Rotello, and then that's the birth of Operation Recall, ultimately.
Not just Operation Recall, but also ties into your omnibus.
Operation Recall was like a giant tumor. Like it started out a little growth on the book. It was just going to be a chapter in The Art of G.I. Joe that was documenting the art of action figure design. That's all it was going to be. One chapter, The Art of Action Figure Design, and we show it along the way. And I was going to release a complimentary video with it. You know, it just grew so far beyond that. The end product was so good. And everybody on the team expressed joy that the experience had happened, but a little sadness that it was the end of that experience. That touched me and made me want to go out to Kickstarter and say, hey, community, this is what I did with the team. And I paid for it out of pocket. It was like 17 grand because I pay everybody that I work with. I don't ask anybody to work for free. Do you want to help me make an all new action figure line? If yes, for every however much you throw at it, we'll develop another figure. And as you know, it was so well received. We got like $415,000 in funding. And since then on BackerKit, we've got another 129 just waiting for me to pull the trigger on it. So it was a good idea.
It was a great idea. Joe and I were talking. We had mentioned how, you know, a couple friends of ours, mutual friends, had yelled, you know, hey, Carson, you got to meet Jason. Jason, you got to meet Carson. Always at the most inopportune times. And then right before Operation Recall kicked off, you had Rotello at Joe Fest, and you and I sat down and we were talking about how, you know, you had sent this in 89. and how, I mean, I was constantly coming up with characters and drawing them and handing them to my mom and saying, hey, mom, send this to Hasbro. And she said, of course I will. I never got any sort of letter.
You didn't get a rejection letter, a breakup letter?
I don't think those things ever left the house.
Aw, mom, come on.
When you said, this is an idea that was born out of me finding this thing from 89, look what I've done with it. I immediately was like, this is everything I want to see in our community, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't know you at that time. This wasn't me like, you know, gassing up a friend. This was me genuinely saying like, I did this as a kid. You did this as a kid. This is a thing we share. The same as you dug trenches in the dirt. I dug trenches in the dirt. We played with our Joes outside. We played with them in our bedrooms on snowy mornings. We have all of these same experiences. This is just one more. And to see where you took it, I thought, oh, that's incredible. That's such a cool idea. I like all of what I'm seeing. And then just very shortly after that comes Operation Recall and the Omnibus, which just soup to nuts, the Omnibus is fantastic.
It's the longest I've ever had to work on anything. I'm a creative professional. I graduated from design school in 2002. And literally every day for my entire adult life, I've made things. But it's usually what other people want to make because that's what pays the bills, right? So you're existing to provide, to be the hands of somebody else that has the brain and you're operating for them and you're making the thing for them and you're adding to it. But ultimately, the idea is back here and they're just pushing it through you. And I bring a lot of value to that, and I enjoy that as a service. I enjoy being a service provider and helping people take their ideas and make them the best they possibly can be within the budget that they have. But that said, it's not ultimately my creative vision and something that like I think needs to exist in the world, and so I'm just going to work on it. And so that's what 3D Joes has been for me for 12 years now. 3D Joes is that thing that I wanted to exist in the world because let's be honest, there already was Yo-Jo. But it was more comprehensive. It had a wider scope. It was crowdsourced, so the assets were really inconsistent. You know, some things were done very professionally, and credit to those people that contributed, like Chad Huckle, Philip Donnelly. There's some amazing people that contributed really professional grade, you know, visuals to Yo-Jo. But let's also be honest in that it wasn't all that great, right?
There were moments.
Yeah. Anyway, it's crowdsourced. I'm not here to trash talk any of the bad assets. They're great people that built that website. There's some contributors that generated really professional visual assets. And so my goal for 3D Joes was just, let's do this professionally every step of the way. What that meant up front was me documenting absolutely everything I have. And then when I ran out of stuff, I started calling in favors from friends and people like Chris Cooper of the Yo-Jo outlet. That guy would mail me box after box after box. He literally would. And I don't even think I paid him for shipping. I think he did that out of the good graces of his heart. And all he got in return was like under the vehicle on 3D Joe's, you know, courtesy of Chris Cooper at the Yo-Jo outlet and a link to his store. That's it. Dude didn't ask for anything. 3D Joe's is still crowdsourced, you know, to a degree. It's just the production and post-production aspects have to go through me so that it's consistent as to what it looks like on the web page. Same thing with the book. I just wanted it to be done as professionally as possible. And those goalposts do shift because what we thought was good enough back in 2015 when we started, we don't think is good enough now. And so we've redone things, you know, and that's the plight of every creator is we all hate our own stuff. we never think it's good enough.
I think on your Kickstarter, you mentioned it was going to be like a 400-page book, and it ends up being like 712, 720.
712.
That's what I like so much about the Omnibus. That's what I like about where you've been at. 2019, I think, I was in Chris Cooper's warehouse.
Oh, nice.
And it is phenomenal. Not to shortchange that dude at all. It is, his warehouse is phenomenal.
And it's been a slow growth. His success story isn't an overnight one. You know, he was running it out of his house when I went to visit him in Cincinnati, back when I went to Joe Fest, I think in Indianapolis, right? I think that's when I went through there. And he was so cool. He took me and Joe to a baseball game, and he's just an amazing host. But I believe at that time he was running the operation out of his house.
Yeah.
And so that just kind of speaks to, if you have a vision for something and you believe that something needs to exist, then you put a little energy into it. And if you're getting the right energy back from the people you're serving or the community or whatever, then double down and put a little more time on it, a little more time on it, until it's something like the omnibus scenario, where I just have to drop everything and make this one thing as freaking amazing as I can.
We were talking a little regularly at that time, and then you sent me some spreadsheet that was like, I'm not going to be available very often. And I was looking at this and I was like, holy shit, who's helping you with this? And you're like, Chad.
Yep. I built that spreadsheet for Chad so that we could be working off the same page.
Yeah. And then you went dark for like a year and a half. And
I have not done many podcasts, that's for sure.
It turned out to be worth it. The level of effort that Brian put into your box, or Chad put into it, or you and your editors and everyone that helped you. And then you did something, I think a little unheard of, is that you set up a group that said, hey, you guys all backed this. If you see problems, things we missed, because everyone's human. And I think James Kavanaugh Jr. has been on the record about every book that's out there has hundreds or thousands of problems, because every creator is a human and things happen. You asked people to let you know if they found things. Unheard of. Most people just gloss over it. Like, we did our best, move on. But you actually crowdsourced the problems, which I think is neat. I have a lot. I mean, I collect books. I have a lot of books in my library. The one complaint I have about the omnibus is it's just 2 inches too big to fit on my bookshelf.
It's a coffee table book, man. You just got to keep it on the coffee table.
That's right.
It is our coffee table.
There you go. Put some legs on it, eh?
It's an amazing book. I think it's worth the monetary price of the book. It's worth the value.
I appreciate that.
I mean, even if you're not me and you don't read it every page, I think it's still worth it, because you're getting all of the photos at one-to-one size. You're getting all of the... And then if you do read it, then you'll actually get penny for penny. You'll get every dollar you put into that out of it.
I like to tell people it's my doctoral thesis on The Art of G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, because it is 75,000 words. You know, and if you single space that's like 112 pages of straight text, right? And that's based off the 50 hours of interviews that I did within the last 4 or 5 years with those guys, as well as the learning that I had done from 2012 to 2019. So, you know, we didn't get here overnight, and all the content that I'm talking about, you know, is thanks in large part to all those creatives that sat down with me and shared their stories and shared their experiences and allowed me to be the one to present it to them in this form. A quick comment about the Facebook group for those that are listening. If you haven't joined it yet, just go to Facebook and look for The Art of G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero feedback group. And the reason that group is so important to me is because when you're that close to something for a year and a half, and even when I hired 4 proofreaders, right? We went through this thing with a fine tooth comb. It doesn't matter how many people are looking at it, how closely. You will miss things.
100%.
And so in December, we shipped 4,000 of those books. We had 4,000 pre-orders. They shipped out the week after Christmas. Since then, we've shipped another 1,700. We've got about 2,700 sets left. So anybody that hasn't bought it, it's not going to sell out in the next few months, more than likely, but it will sell out. And you honestly will regret not getting it, because nothing will come this close in terms of size and scale and comprehensive nature in terms of the topics we're covering. So get on it. Don't sleep on it. Like, in the next year, I would encourage you, in the next year, buy it.
The thing that compels me the most, if you're talking about, every single one of us can get online and look up photos, but your artist profiles, you can't look some of that stuff up. Your behind the scenes stuff, some of it you can, some of it you can't. There is so much in this that even if you want to look up individual figures right now, you can just flip from page to page. So whether you read it or just flip through it, I continue to recommend this as a must have for a Joe collection or for a book collection, a toy collection. Even regardless of the photos, the things that are written in there, the 75,000 words, there's so much in there that is just not other places.
And I like to say, and thank you for that, Jason. I like to say to the people out there where money's just too tight, man, I get it. I feel you. I really do. And I don't want you to have to spend $150 on a book that you have to put on a credit card or something like that. So don't. And then I want to make them feel better by letting them know that the majority of this stuff is available on 3D Joe's for free and in perpetuity. You can go to Ron Rudat's creator profile page. You can go to Ed Morrill's creator profile page, Mark Pennington's, Bill Merkline's. Those are the best resources for you if you want to know about the people behind the line that made our favorite brand great. That's your best online free resource. And I will only continue to build those up. On my short list of things to do for 3D Joe's is build a creator profile for Doug Hart, the package painter, and for Vinny DeLevia, the brand manager for the 90s. And so stories that are in the book, like Vinny talking about his trip to the principal's office when he got in trouble for the Dino Hunters packaging, tried to fight his way into getting something pushed through that he probably shouldn't have, and he ended up losing that battle. That story is amazing. And that story will probably be on Vinny's creator profile page. So yes, buy the book because it supports 3D Joe's. It helps us keep doing what we're doing. And it's an amazing physical artifact. And let's be honest, you know you love physical artifacts. You want to flip through those pages and read these stories. It's a way better experience than clicking through pages on a website. You do want the book. But that said, I'm not going to force you to sit behind, like, I'm not going to force this content behind a paywall where the only way you're ever going to get access to it is by paying me $150. I do not like that. I do not like that mentality. I believe, you know, there's people that have the means to buy these kinds of things and there's people that don't. And I want to serve the people that don't as well. You know what I mean? So that's what 3D Joe's is all about. There's no ads on that website. And I'm getting well over a million page views a year now. And I'm not even monetizing that. Like, I'm not here for the money. I'm here for the love of the brand and the joy I personally get from archiving it.
And it shows in the book. So Jody Classified has been doing this for a long time, but they've also partnered with you and with other people that aren't necessarily part of them. So a lot of your stuff has been viewable at their booth while you're running, where you're doing AV Club stuff for shows.
Yeah. So for Joe Fest, for the last several years, I've helped them out with AV in the panel room. And that's just because the year before I started helping them, I had a less than perfect experience. And I was like, hey, let me help you with this next year because I want everybody to have a better experience. So yes, Joe Declassified has like absorbed my booth into theirs so that I can be upstairs and back up and up and down, you know, helping out.
When you say you have a smallest, like, of stuff you are planning for 3D Joe's, do you really mean small?
Yeah. Well, there's nothing small or big on 3D Joe's. In my opinion, it's just web pages, man. It's just low resolution artwork. It's low resolution 360 spins. There's nothing big on 3D Joe's. The big thing about 3D Joe's, though, is that it's over 1,000 pages documenting every figure, every playset, every vehicle, a lot of peripheral stuff. And now we're getting really deep into the creator profiles. If I had to say what's the biggest thing on 3D Joe's, I would say it's the creator profiles, because that kind of stuff has never been online. It's, if you go to those creator profile pages, it's hundreds of images, thousands of words on every one of those creators' creator profiles. We spend months building each of those individual pages. Like it literally, like each page I spend months on just to do, like Guy Cassaday's page, for example. And I'm not alone. I get a lot of help from the community. Chris Murray from Declassified is like my editor there. We work together and make sure that we represent Guy properly and as exhaustively as possible. So if I had to say, like, what's the biggest thing on 3D Joe's, I would say it's the creator profiles, because they're really exhaustive, they're really insightful, and there's nowhere else on the web to find that information. It's a brand new type of resource. You know, what you've had in the past with documenting the action figures, YoJo has done that, but maybe not as consistently, not as professionally, not as mobile friendly, et cetera. Certainly since ownership has changed at YoJo and they have banner ads everywhere and development has stopped, it's a more enjoyable and more streamlined experience at 3D Joe's. In terms of what's the development trajectory going forward, it's continuing to build those gigantic creator profile pages. So Vinny DeLevia, the brand manager, and Doug Hart, the painter, are up next. But also, if you go under the pre-production tab, we've started to build out the figures pages. I think we're on 84 or 85 right now. I will build that all the way through 94. And then as people share more and more stuff with me, we will continue to add that to those pages. So that'll only grow. And then we've actually got a bunch of pre-production vehicle pages already partially built. But those are kind of hidden for right now because I don't like to roll pages out until they're fully baked and we've given it everything we can give it. So there's a lot of pages that are partially built that as soon as, you know, my queue clears out, we'll talk about that more in the podcast, I'm sure. That'll be what I'm returning to on 3D Joe's, the pre-production pages.
Okay.
Sweet.
As we talk about the book, which I'm obviously a fan of, and as we talk about Operation Recall, which I'm obviously a fan of, Alexander has joined us, and you're pulling up a spreadsheet for us to guide some of this conversation.
Alexander, how you been, buddy?
Good.
Now, what you been up to, man? It's been about a year. Other than longer hair and maybe a little taller and leaner, what's changed for you in the last year?
We've just started watching the X-Men.
Now, is that the OG X-Men from my childhood, or is it X-Men 97 that they're just rolling out on Disney?
The OG.
You're watching the OG. Awesome.
Yeah.
So I started watching X-Men 97, and it obviously I have it on my wall running all the time. So I'm a fan, right? That's what the third television is there. I always have X-Men 97 running, but that doesn't mean I'm actively connecting with it. There's a big difference between like having something on your walls and actively connecting with it. So X-Men 97 got me back into the OG X-Men. So in between X-Men 97 episodes, I'm going back and watching the OG. Who's your favorite character?
That's tough.
Yeah, you're torn between Rogue and Storm, aren't you? It was a dilemma I faced as a kid too. All right. Well, let's check in on Recall, man. It's been about a year since I've talked to you guys. But have you been able to follow along online? Have you seen the social media posts and those kinds of things?
I don't think Alexander hasn't been able to see that stuff, but what I do is I show him all of the photos that you send out. So he may not be reading all the words, but he sees every sculpt, every pre-production, every posted colorway, everything. And as you've grown your team, I've kept him in the knowledge of who's joined the team, what they're doing, and why.
Well, that's a good place to kind of start the update is like current state, who's doing what, right? Because we got 10 people working on the brand right now.
So originally it was Kirk, Ron, Mark, and then you had Ed Morrill and his son, plus Doug.
And Bill Marcline and Larry Hama. The team started big and it's gotten a little bigger.
But since then you've added Mike Good.
Yes.
Incomparable. Like fantastic.
We've renamed him Mike Great.
Yes. You've added Chris Scott. You've added
Matthew LaCroix.
Yes, Matthew LaCroix. You've added Mark Gerwig. Plus, you've had help from David and Chad and Scott and others.
Yes, the Operation Recall concept creators, the people like Alexander that originally submitted ideas that got selected, we created a Facebook private group for us and this group messaging platform. And that thing is blowing up every day. But there is so many things. There's so many good ideas being shared there and some bad ones. And we're not going to incorporate everything, but we are incorporating a lot of it. It's such a great, like, you know how companies have like a board of leaders that just sit around and talk about the company and the direction and where they should go and stuff like that. I feel like the Operation Recall Year One Facebook Messenger group is like my board, you know, or it's at least my sounding board for ideas. And you know me, I'm not greedy. When something comes in and it excites me, I want to share it right away. Even if I think like from a professional social media standpoint, you should do a slow drip of marketing. I'm like, yeah, whatever. I just want to share this right now, you know? And so that group has been really good for me to kind of serve as like my outlet to share my like just genuine excitement for the project.
You know, it's crazy because the concepts were chosen by a committee of which you were sort of the guiding hand, but not the choosing voice.
Oh, absolutely. I think I had a vote. I think I had a vote, but I was like one of four votes.
But so many that were chosen here on the back end turned out to have incredible skills that were valuable at different places. And one of the things that many of your your creators have talked about, and I've been lucky enough to be, you know, the fly on the wall in that conversation, or at least the social media presence for Alexander, is that your initial legalese sign-off was that you guys create the thing, you guys turn it in, you guys walk away. When we're done, we'll hand you some stuff.
Yeah, we'll give you five of the final product.
But that was a complete lie, because what has actually happened is you guys create the thing, you guys hand it off, you guys don't walk away, you guys stay involved, and we continue to ask your opinion and give you options. And Alexander, you've had, at every one of those, you've had the opportunity to sit down and look at and provide feedback. How has that felt for you coming into this?
It's been great. For certain parts, there were things that like were yeses and nos.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I'm really happy with what's coming out. I'm in pain waiting for this.
Well, I apologize for the pain, but hopefully the steps along the way have been worthwhile and like added to the journey, make it more enjoyable. You know, if it goes without saying probably, but for those who are listening to the podcast that don't know about Operation Recall, when we did that first figure of Rotello, it was based off of my concept that I had as a 10-year-old. I gave Ron Rudat the option to not do that figure, to do anything else he wanted to do that he didn't get to do back in the day. And he selected, he was like, no, that's cool. Let's do a radio teletype operator with a carrier pigeon. That's cool. I was like, really? And so once I got to watch those guys go through that process, at the time, this was just Ron Rudat, Kirk Bazigian, Bill Merkline, Doug Hart, Ed Morrill, Larry Hama. The team was a little smaller. It was like five or six people, right? But watching them go through that creative process was so much fun for me. And like Alexander, some things were a yes, some things were a no. I didn't love everything, every decision made, but I understood that this is no longer my baby. Like I planted the seed, I handed this thing off, and it's up to them to feed it and water it and grow it and groom it and make it what they want to make it, because I have to respect them as the creative team. And you know, they've got decades of experience with this, whereas I'm just a fanboy, right? It's been such a collaborative process with those guys and everybody that, you know, that submitted these concepts. I didn't want to just blow them off, man. I wanted them to have that same experience that I did of getting to see the sketches when they come in, the color studies when they come in, the presentation art, the sculpt work, you know, because every step of it is so much fun. It just like reinvigorates your excitement for the project. So, yeah, I just didn't want to be greedy and keep that all to myself. I wanted to share it with the concept creators. So that's why we set up that Facebook.
And every step that you've shared, either passively, like here's what's happening, or actively, here's what's happening, would you like to give feedback?
Oh yeah.
Your concept creators, they're continuing to grow in the process as well. In the beginning, it was very much like, I created this one thing, it needs to stay this one thing. After about the third one, you were like, I created this thing, but I really like this idea over here. And so you get to watch them come to terms with how their projects are changing, how their concepts are changing. But you also get to see every step of the path, which was not what was agreed upon. It was not our expectation walking into this. Our expectation walking into this was like, we handed you an idea. Good luck. We'll see you in about 18 months. We're past the 18 months now, but that's the process that we've agreed to. We're not doing it the fast way. Nothing is done digitally. Bang it out, ship it off.
Well, it's also the scale. The number one thing I would say about timing to anybody out there that's like, well, we're past December of 2023. What's up? I'll answer that real quick. The December of 2023 estimate was as if we funded the first wave. We didn't fund the first wave. We funded four waves plus three bonus figures. So we're developing all those in parallel. I'm not just developing one wave at a time. And so this is actually a good segue to this chart that I pulled up for you. It's not like I'm running one project here. I'm running 19 smaller projects, right? And so when you look at each of these rows, that's a project. And then each of these columns is just one step along the way. And so you'll see, hey, it's mostly green now, right? So, mostly. And you see this last step right here is manufacturing. And in reality, when we get into that, we're probably going to end up breaking that into like another 5 steps or whatever. Like, you know how it goes as you run a Gantt chart.
That wasn't meant to grill you at all. Like,
oh, sure.
I think most of us in the community know the process of how long these things take. And so we all knew 18 months sounds reasonable. And then by the end of the Kickstarter, 18 months doesn't sound reasonable. I think if anyone's giving you grief about it, it's because a lot of aunts, uncles, and grandmas and parents put on this and they don't know shit about what we do.
Sure.
And so you have a lot of people answering those questions for people outside of our community. And so what you're showing right now, or what you're talking about with being 19 different projects, 18 months was based on 4 figures, not on 19.
Right.
I think that's a good thing to hand to our community that says, hey, if you are getting these questions.
Yeah. If you get this question, here's the answer that most succinctly explains what's going on.
Correct. Because I'm sure there's probably not a single person in the toy community that's asked you question one about the time frame.
Oh yeah. They all tell me, take my time and do it right.
Correct.
You know, they're very understanding people. I've gotten grilled very, very little. But when that question does come up, like especially in a podcast where people are going to hear the conversation, I want to equip people with the right answer, which is, you know, yeah, that estimate was based upon us securing funding for one wave of 4 figures. And luckily, God bless, we ended up funding 19 figures. So it's going to take a little longer. And then to get more granular with that, there you have to start educating people on what the steps are and what they actually take.
And today's steps and yesterday's steps are not the same.
That's true. And each one of these line items is at its own little phase in the project. And so it's just an incredibly comprehensive process. So, Alexander, your update is that the Wave 2 sculpt is done and the resin casts are done. And those will be next up for Paint Masters. So that's your current state of affairs for shh. Now, the sculpting for all figures is done. But for some of those figures, I'm coming in as an art director. And I'm saying, okay, I want to try to improve this or I want to change this. And so I'm revising some sculpts. But by and far, every figure sculpt is done. Every figure accessory sculpt is done. I'm still making some changes. Like with Night Raid, I just got Mark Gerwig to add this giant tripod with a separate head that allows it to rotate and allows the gun to twist. And I just posted a photo of that on social media and it does look great. Like he looks amazing. So he's got this giant scorpion backpack with this flexible ammo that bends and comes around and plugs into the gun. And then the gun sits on the tripod and then the tripod can rotate and tilt. It's amazing. It's a great, great set of accessories. Seeing him with just the gun in his hands, he's a big diesel dude, and I know he could carry a gun that big because I've seen YouTube videos of big guys carrying it and shooting it with no tripod, so it could have happened. But just seeing him, like, you know, he's already, like, kind of top-heavy. He's that portly kind of mercenary that's been around a while. It just looked kind of funny to me to have this big portly guy carrying this big gun, and I'm like, he's not going to move very fast or very far. So I was like, well, why don't we make him more of a defensive position? Because if you look up the NSV online, it's a big Russian machine gun. It's used for anti-air, actually, like close proximity anti-air. And it's also got armor piercing. It's, you know, pretty significant round size. So I was like, it might make sense for Night Raid to be a little more stationary with that weapon.
And he's one of the, even though these are all recalled soldiers, he's still one of the elder in the group.
He is.
He may not be Scrounger's age, but he's still one of the elders.
That's right.
And his body is meant to represent that. And since you brought up his body being a little bit more portly, one of the things that I've noticed in, I'm curious what your thoughts are, because I know what mine are. Callsign Longbow is, they targeted 1986 and they are attempting to look like they could slide right onto your 1986 shelf. Delta 17 has a very October Guard-ish look. Their backpacks do not look G.I. Joe-ish at all, but they're meant to carry everything, which is awesome.
Conceptually, I really like the Delta 17 backpacks, the way that everything pegs together and you have all that extra functionality. But to your point, it doesn't look like a organic hand sculpted G.I. Joe.
Right. Well, where I was going with this was that, like, all of these brands are hyper collaborative. No one's really in competition. The Riot Commando, they tried something new with the knees. They've got a double neck.
Yes.
The Wolf Trooper has a very specific and detailed backpack that pegs in a very modern way. When this started, we all expected, at least, you know, Alexander, I don't know about you, but I think most of us expected Operation Recall because it was the recalled creators. It was going to be like more like Call Sign Longbow, where it, you could slide it into your 1988 shelf. But after seeing the sculpts and the way you've done all the body variations, you're taking the sacrosanct, the sacred O-ring, and playing in the field instead of matching the field.
That's exactly right. And that is by design. That is at the request of the legendary creators that are recalled to active duty. So the birth, the genesis of us deciding to play with the buck, as you would call it, that all came from Bill Merkline, Ron Rudak, Kirk Bazigian, and Mark Pennington. They had all worked on Rotello. Bar none, they felt conceptually limited by the Hasbro engineering department that made them work with this very constrained buck. They were not fans of not being able to change it. I'll give you a few examples. When Bill Merkline was sculpting Lady J, he was like, come on, this is a male buck. Like, we got to change this buck a little bit to make Lady J look a little more feminine. He lost that fight. When Ron Rudat was designed as Leatherneck, you know, Ron Rudat was like 6'5", 6'6", at the time. And Bill Merkline knew him. He called Roger Avery, the sculpting manager, said, Roger, we got to do something special for Ron. Like, this, if this is supposed to be Ron, Leatherneck needs to be a little taller, a little bigger. And he lost that battle. Kirk Bazigian wanted them to have variation in the buck. It was literally the engineering team not wanting to deal with the logistical nightmares, which are created by having different size bucks. So what we decided to do with Operation Recall, we're working off of the same buck that Call Sign Longbow is working off of. The only changes that we made to it is you have a range of fluctuation, a range of variance from the core. So I want to be clear up front with this. Out of 19 figures that we're making, I believe 12 are standard. All right. So while you're seeing like 7 figures that have a little variation to them, that's not the majority of what we're doing. The reason we are doing it with those 7 figures, though, is because the creatives wanted it to happen. And so when you look at a figure like Runback, she's a Japanese-American young lady, works with technology. We're like, okay, maybe she'd be a little smaller than, say, Bearclaw, you know, this big guy that lives out in the woods and like fights bears with his bare hands, right? So maybe a dude like Bearclaw is going to be just a little taller. Maybe his shoulders are a little wider, right? That's all the variation we decided to do. The hip joints are the same. The shoulder joints are the same. The neck joint is the same. All the connection points are the same. You'll still be able to customize them, pop that screw out, swap parts, do whatever you want to. We're not messing with any of that functionality. All we're doing is giving the creators the option on a 3¾-inch figure. Do you want this figure to be a 1/4-inch shorter, like Runback, or a 1/4-inch taller, like General Mortifero, who's going to lord over people, right? And then do you want their shoulders to be standard, or do you want them to be a 1/4-inch wider?
Amazing.
Just introducing those three variables, it doesn't change, you know, your ability to enjoy these figures just like a real American hero. What it does change is on the shelf, you're going to have a shelf presence that's a little different. It's not unprecedented. Look at what they did with Street Fighter II in 1993 or any of the Ninja Force stuff or the Armor Tech stuff. They played with the bucks in the 90s. But the biggest variation you're going to get is like Runback at 3½ inches versus General Mortifero at 4 inches, right? And then you might have a figure like Dark Reapers. Those are the kind of gunners. They come up in a squad and they just shoot and destroy everything. Those guys are going to be standard height, but their shoulders are going to be a little bit broader, you know, just to give them that big, beefy, padded up, armored appearance. So I've had a lot of fun with it. You know, I got a question about that when I posted the latest Night Raid with all of his big weaponry. And they were like, are you concerned that this won't blend with a real American hero? And I said, I'm not at all concerned. This came from the creators wanting to, you know, show some different shapes and sizes. And You know, why would I want them to be stuck with the same rules they hated in the 80s and 90s? If I'm the project manager and they hated on engineering for not giving them this flexibility in the 80s and 90s, why would I want to be the guy in charge of the project that says, no, you can't do that?
Right.
I'm giving them the same stupid no that they got 30 years ago. I want everybody to have fun and grow and try to do something better than they did before.
So much has changed in that time frame. And from the inception of that concept, when the conversation started, and as you mentioned earlier, these are the things that you should probably keep to yourself, but you were like, yeah, I'm going to share them. And the concept creators got to know right up front this was happening. They got to voice their opinions. And in fact, there was a couple things that came out of that conversation that helped add to this variance and how it was going to happen. You know, we were already prepared for that sort of oddity with A's character, because he had the robot leg. And when we got Mark Pennington's concept art, I think two of those legs looked like they could have been a standard Buck leg with robot parts. And then every other thing he drew was clearly robotic.
Oh, yeah.
And so we knew that at least one figure was going to be a little out the box. And you went, why just one when we can do seven? You know, to your point, it's less than half. It's about a third. But when you have a third that are just a little tweaked, it stands out, and not in a bad way. It's great. I didn't realize that 12 of them were fairly standard. I'm curious to get these on the floor and start playing with them. And you're going to have to start seeing, just like with modern figures, this figure may not fit comfortably in the Vamp, but it's going to fit comfortably in this other vehicle.
Right.
And this one might be a little too small for the Vamp, but she's going to be perfect for this vehicle. And you can really start to hone in and specialize your figures to your vehicles, instead of, I'm just going to play with 82 this weekend and like 87 that weekend, but all the vehicles are interchangeable. You're actually having to make choices based on the character, not on the toy. I think that's going to be fun.
Like we are here as real humans, you know. I absolutely love the Jaguar F-Type. I think it's one of the most beautiful vehicles ever created. And I went and sat in one and I test drove it. And at 6'3", it's not my cup of tea. It's not really made for me. It's a beautiful vehicle, absolutely gorgeous piece of industrial design, but it's just not the optimal vehicle for me. And I think that's okay in our action figures too.
That's something that the modern sculpt era has been dealing with since 2007. So it's not new. Nothing what you're doing is something we've never seen before. What it is a really fresh take on something that we've made sacred for a little too long.
Yeah. And when you realize that the impetus for these changes are coming from the creators themselves that made that thing that we reserve, that we hold up on such a pedestal, it's like, hey, look, if they weren't content with this mandate that they had back then, and they want to change that mandate, who are we as the fans and consumers of this stuff to say, no, you can't change that mandate. You have to stick to that rule that those engineers told you back in 1985. Like, come on, man. It's 2024. We're almost 40 years removed from Bill Mark. Actually, we are 40 years removed from Bill Merkline working on Jinx and complaining about her buck, because she would have been in development in 83 or 84. So, you know, we're 40 years removed from these engineers telling these creators that they couldn't make a better action figure. We're not going to keep doing that. We're going to let them do it how they want to do it.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. Those 13 years are sacred.
Oh, of course.
We've had Duke since 1983, so we can have something else now, and I'm excited for it. What really is compelling to me is how many stories A and I have been able to tell each other and come up with just looking at the line. And then when we start to think about, as we said before, collaborative, not competitive, as we start to think about Operation Recall intermixing with Skeletron, intermixing with Callsign, intermixing with Riot Commandos, with Delta 17, with Strike Force Alpha, you really start to build a beautiful world that then you can bring those sacred O-rings into.
Man, let me just say, we're more than collegial. You know, we're very collaborative, and I don't know to what degree things will mix, but I do know there are plans for overlap in everything from storytelling to retail. All of them have been discussed. And so, you know, I've got ideas for how I would love to merge the universes. I think I'm one of the people that's more focused on, okay, what's the story going to be that we're going to tell about these guys? Like
has to be narrative first.
Yeah. Otherwise it's just plastic. Right. And so we've drafted mainly Joe has drafted 8 issues worth of comic book content. That is freaking fantastic. Like I can't wait to tell people the entire story of this is just the first arc, these 8 issues.
I spoke to Joe last summer. It sat in my to-do pile for a while, and we just published that conversation. And in that conversation, Joe was like, I've pitched ideas, but it's not going to happen. I'm not going to be the guy writing it.
Wow.
And not just a couple weeks later.
Yeah.
A couple weeks later for this podcast, but, you know, months and months later for Joe, you're telling everyone, Joe is the guy doing it.
Joe has done a great job. We've talked about it. I would say that maybe I'm like an editor and he's like the writer in that we've had conversations. I've maybe helped steer a couple things here and there, but it's mostly coming from him. And I think it's fantastic. Now, I have also talked to Larry Hama and Jim Shooter and a couple other people. I've got the illustrator lined up. So I think, you know, the comic book is in a good spot. I just need the funding for it. I'm not going to spend the money that we have earmarked for figure production on comic book production. I have to make sure, first and foremost, that I deliver on my promises of the 19 action figures, right? So I'm just being cautious and careful as like a business manager, project manager, to make sure that we're doing everything that we can do on the back end that doesn't cost us a nickel, which is, you know, write the first 8 issues and continue to refine those ideas and circulate it to the team and continue to come up with new ideas to kind of embellish and improve that, but we're not hiring and paying out money towards that yet. Well, I'm confident we'll get there, and I'm more and more excited about the story that we're crafting as new ideas are coming into play.
The indie comic book world is expensive. It's not cheap.
Oh yeah.
To know that you've looked at the cost, you've priced things out, but you're setting that to the side to make sure that the figures are handled. I'm excited, one, that you've still continued forward with it and that Joe is on the case, because Joe's got a great imagination and a great mind. He tells a good story.
We will definitely get there. You know, the question is, how much time is it going to take? To me, if we don't tell a story, it's just another toy line. It's just other hunks of plastic. The thing that is going to make people passionate consumers of any given toy line is them being excited about the characters.
Narrative is everything.
Yeah. Wanting to see what happens with the characters next. You know, it's just going to feed their imagination, and they're going to take those characters, what you give them, what Larry Hama writes for the dossiers and what you put into the comic books. They're going to take that and go tell their own stories. But if you don't give them that foundation, that storytelling foundation, they're not going to, I mean, sure, they could entirely make up something on their own, but it's not likely to happen. You know, people are more likely to watch the X-Men cartoons, read the Chris Claremont comic books, and then go make their own stories with those characters based off of the personalities and situations that they've already seen.
Operation Recall, because of the concept creators, right from the very beginning, you had this natural bubbling up of fan art and fan stories before anything was known.
That was cool.
Before anything was known other than the names of the humans that our legendary creators chose. And I thought that was a lot of fun. And as things have come to light, such as Larry's file cards, all of this fan creative side hasn't slowed down. It's just incorporated.
Yeah, it's modifying it to match what they're now seeing.
As you've added, all right, here's our color studies, and here's the colors that the concept creators liked, and here's what Kirk liked, and here's what we finally went with in our presentation art. Again, they haven't stopped. They've just one more modification all the way through the process. And it's been really fun. I've been very touched and honored to be able to view that conversation and then feed it back to Alexander. And sometimes I can throw in an opinion or two, but it's not my game. It's theirs. It's yours.
It's so amazing to see the value that has come from that group. Seriously. I just got in a new head sculpt yesterday, literally yesterday, from Mike Good. Mike's out in California. He takes some pretty great photos of his work before he sends it to me, asks me if I want to see any revisions. because I'm excited about this head sculpt, and it looks just like the concept creator, Gabriel, who took headshots for me from various angles, and I was able to pass those to Mike, and that's how we were able to get such a good likeness. But it just gives Breacher this really cocky, confident swagger, which is perfect for a character that's the door kicker, the first one through. He's got to be the bravest, cockiest, most confident, you know, guy. And so we just got that in yesterday, and I just thought it was amazing, so I wanted to share it with the group. And almost immediately, one of the people in the group said, well, cool, what's going to be the label, or what's going to be the patch that's on the hat? Because there was nothing on the hat, right? It's just a bareback. And I was like, man, that's a really good point. So I went to Larry's dossier and figured out what police force SWAT team he served with before being called into recall. And I was like, what if he took a hat as a memento of his prior career and wears it all the time at recall now? So we're going to have the icon that's representative of that police force's SWAT team. I went back to Mike last night on email, shared that icon with him, and said, can you sculpt this onto the back of the hat?
Oh, shit.
And he said, yes, I'll have it out to you in a couple days. So that's literally, yes. That's just one example of how useful that group is. It's good ideas on top of good ideas on top of good ideas. And we don't use all of the ideas, but I'll be darned if that group has not helped improve this line tremendously.
In terms of that hat by itself, there were two or three other ideas aside from the one you chose that were equally as good. And so you had a smorgasbord of ideas without ever having to like open your own brain to choose from. And you chose the one that fit you and fit the line. There was a different one that I liked. And then you came up with, you were like, this is the one we're going to do. And I don't know, it's crazy to see how quickly 9 or 10 ideas show up, aside from whatever you had or whatever Mike had or whatever.
That's the beauty of a writer's room. And I think that's why companies pay big money to put a writer's room together, because you get that kind of brilliant moment where everybody's feeding off of each other's energy.
I probably missed some stuff because I only see what's shown. Like, I didn't know about the patch thing on the hat.
Oh, yeah, that just happened last night. So, your dad probably just hasn't shown you yet. Well, and to be clear, there is no patch on the hat yet. Right. So I showed this figure sculpt and he's got a hat on backwards. And one of the guys was like, well, what's on the back of the hat? And I'm like, what is on the back of the hat? Let me go figure this out, you know? And so it's just one of these things where we're brainstorming and bouncing off of each other.
You saw the head sculpt, Alexander.
Yes.
But it was you saw the head sculpt before the conversation happened. You've been at school all day. And because you don't have a Facebook Messenger account, you do miss out in the conversation, but I absolutely make sure that any decision points get sent to you, and then any character development gets shared with you, even if it's not because I know you have pumped your fist for all 19 figures. You have celebrated all 19, not just one.
Yeah.
Which gets back to what we were talking about with other brands. It's always collaborative, not competitive. And there's not a person in your concept creator melting pot or writer's room, whatever you want to call it, that isn't celebrating every other figure almost with as much or more gusto than their own.
They all want them all to be as good as they possibly can be. There's no like concept creator competition going on where one person wants to tank another person's idea or something. I think I think we're all just having fun. I think we're all just enjoying the creative process and, you know, happy and honored to be a part of it, to be honest.
One of the things I've been really honored to be a part of is as I've sat down with all of your concept creators and talked to them individually, whether it's made it into the final edit of the conversation, every single one of us has together been telling stories to one another about how these figures are going to go together. Every single person I've talked to has been overjoyed with and has incorporated into their own mythos and stories of how they're either going to work with the character or work against him. And then sitting down with them, I've been able to also tell them how we're going to how I'm going to play on the floor with their character. And Alexander's been able to do the same in the conversations that he's been a part of. And because of JoeFest, he's been able to meet several of these concept creators. And hopefully in June, we'll get to meet more. You know, and in talking about 19 projects, 19 characters, that's also not exactly true because you have 7 or 8 animals companions.
Good point.
So this 19 is now like 25 to 26-ish.
Yeah, we do have a lot of sidekicks, man. I'm a sucker for sidekicks. What can I say?
There's a reason why we got at least 2 a year.
Well, they were financially very successful. It's one of the things I was talking about in Kirk Bazigian's interview. You know, as soon as when 1984 hit, you got Mutt and Junkyard and you got Spirit and Freedom, and those just did really well. It was like, well, that's a new thing. We're just going to be doing that going forward, you know? And to me, it was a gold mine for the cartoon. And so when I think about, you know, Operation Recall and what is the best case scenarios, you know, you don't ever count on anything, but you want to plan for it. And for me, like best case scenario, if this line went bananas, you would have a mature comic book like we got with Larry's G.I. Joe comic book. It's going to be mature. There's going to be some death. There's going to be some learning. There's going to be some struggle and some strife. But if we ever got a cartoon, it would be a lot lighter. It would be geared towards younger audiences. And we would have a gold mine with, you know, carrier pigeons and Galapagos tortoises and just all kind of everything in between, multiple canines. You know, cheetahs, we've got a little bit of everything. And so I think the cartoon in and of itself, man, like, you know, how they had the Super Friends for Superman, Batman, whatever, the Super Friends pets.
Yeah.
There was actually a comic book series related. I think they had a cartoon. They had a feature film recently, I think, that was about those Super sidekicks. Pets. Yeah. So we're going to have better pets than they have. Their pets are lame compared to our pets. Our pets are way more diverse. So it could
be. Yeah, we have a turtle with missiles on his back.
A missile launching turtle, man. That's like the definition of turtle power. I wonder if we can get away with like his battle cry being turtle power. Or is that trademarked? You know? I'd have to find out.
It probably is.
That might be something that, you know, if turtle power isn't trademarked, he could say the battle cry, and then other people within the cartoon of the comic be like, are you sure you could say that? That's it. You know,
a little breakage of the fourth wall never hurt anybody.
Exactly. Like they turn the camera. Can we say that?
Yeah,
that'd be great. But yeah, we got some amazing sidekicks, man. That's been a big part of the fun. And obviously my concept started out with a carrier pigeon. So when you start with a carrier pigeon, it's only down from there.
I'm excited for all of this. I like how Rotello has been tied into so many of the characters. I like how there's a nice split of the good and the bad guys, and how we have a couple different army builders in this group. And then if you're a pet army builder, then, you know.
I didn't even mention that we have Wilson, a freaking raccoon, like pulled straight out of nature.
That's right.
That's not even a domesticated animal. Like, what are you doing with a raccoon?
Wilson wasn't even part of the original pitch.
He wasn't.
Wilson came from all of this bubbling up of ideas and energy and excitement.
Good ideas come from everywhere. And Wilson came from Ron Rudat's final presentation art. Ron had drawn him with a freaking raccoon in a stump underneath that. Like, he had his leg up on one stump, and in that stump was Wilson. I was like, wait a minute, who's this guy? Let's explore him. You know what I mean? And then so the idea with Bear Claw is that this dude's out in the woods a little too much. You know, he's getting a little too lonely out there. And so he's befriending the wildlife. He's probably sharing his MREs with them or whatever. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Tom Hanks, and I really enjoyed the movie Castaway. And so Wilson was his volleyball that he befriended on the island. So to me, Wilson is the pet raccoon that Bear Claw, you know, befriended when he was out there in the woods for a little too long. So it's just fun.
He was on his own long enough to talk to the wilderness.
That's right.
And raccoons are smart enough to talk back.
That's right. They are little jerks, though, from what I hear.
I would still have one in my house. Right now, as I did a lot of the interviews with your concept creators, we started at that point of things were just chosen. What do you hope to see? What's the hill you're willing to die on? What's the thing that you're really hoping for? And I think we started with A and B talking, Alexander and Bobby, you know, Shh and Clanker chopping it up, and then talking to everybody else. And I haven't finished talking to everybody, so we still have a few more to go. But every single person, you know, was very deep in and ready to go and loving it and having a great time. But the project has moved. We're no longer at Ron and Mark doing their part. We're not at the color studies anymore. That was a year ago.
Yeah.
We're now, as you mentioned, the sculpts are officially done, but there are still like a couple tweaks that might be happening on the side. And you brought in Gerwig, who is a phenomenal sculptor in his own right, to help with equipment as Mike and as Bill focused on the figures. But we're even beyond that now, where the two-ups have been made and LaCroix and Chris Scott are, they have them in hand and they're starting to paint, and a couple are even done.
Yep.
And I don't know how much you want to get into that, but from what we've seen, my guy, holy shit, did you choose the right guys to paint this?
Yeah. I mean, dude, I feel like I've got the right talent every step of the way. I really do. I feel so lucky to have been partnered up with the people that I've been partnered up with this project. And none of that would have happened if I didn't get that Kickstarter funding of $415,000, because look, people have to believe in me and, you know, like the level of energy which I bring to things, which is a lot at times. And I realize that could be overwhelming, but they have to enjoy the idea that I'm pitching beyond just getting a paycheck, right? No, nobody's going to do the work just to get the money. They want to like the people they work with, and they want to be inspired to work on the things they're working on. And so I think what really helped was, this is a great story. The idea that we're getting the Beatles back together to play a whole new album. Like, we did a single with Rutello and it was amazing. So let's do a whole album. And these are the people that get to work with these legends on what might be their last big push in the toy industry. I don't think Bill Merkline will be, you know, sculpting more figures after this. You know, he's getting up there, man. And so a lot of these guys, you know, it's the fact that we were able to get them all together and excited about the same project and to give a couple years of their time to this is special. It's lightning in a bottle. And so I think for people like Matthew LaCroix and Chris Scott, who represent the new generation of toy makers, for them to be able to be doing these paint masters, I think, and rightfully so, that they're honored, you know what I mean? That they want so badly to be part of this project, because they realize like the gravitas behind who's creating these things and what it represents. Just so I can give a shout out to the number of people that have been involved in this. You started with the submissions. We had 270 people submit designs for this. Yes, we only selected the top 16 and then we threw in three bonus figures on top of that, but we got 270 people that contributed ideas. Then we went to ideation, which is like the brainstorming, and that's all Ron Rudat and Mark Pennington. So those are our two designers. Then you had Kirk Bazigian reviewing every figure, right? Alongside me, but that's three. We won't count me. Revised line art, that's still Mark and Ron Rudat, right? Figure and accessory sculpt sheets, still Mark, still Ron. Color studies, still Mark, still Ron. Design review, still Kirk Bazigian and me. Revised color studies. This is where the boys jumped in from that Operation Recall Year One group. They had a handful of them. I'm not going to count them on my list, but they absolutely helped. So there's more than three professionals that worked on this. Colored sculpt sheets. Again, the boys, like you see folks like Chad LaForce, Scott Brown, Chris Scott, David Emanuele Martinez, they all jumped in and helped me with these revised color studies and with these colored sculpt sheets. Those are very useful because those are what are sent to Doug Hart before he makes the painting. They'll be what are sent to the factory for a color guide alongside the painted two-up. So that's all very useful stuff. Presentation artwork, still Mark, still Ron. Dossier research, me again. Dossier writing, that's Larry. So I'm going to put up a fourth finger for Larry Hama. Accessory modeling. Now, Adam Freeman helped me do Rutello. But that's it. Ever since then, it's been Mark Gerwig. I'm going to count both of those because Adam did an amazing job on Rutello.
Absolutely.
That's six. Accessory printing. Mike Seifert helped me with the first pilot. You know, again, Rutello was the pilot. It was the single. Since then, I got the Form 3. It's an amazing printer set up at my house. I've learned a little bit of the software. I'm doing all the accessory printing. So we'll count Mike there. That's seven. Package layouts, package art sketches, all by Ed Morrill. That's number eight. Ed Morrill was in charge of branding for Hasbro from 1969 to 1989 as an external contractor with his own packaging firm. So that's eight. Then you get to package painting. That's all Doug Hart. We got to throw up a number nine for Doug Hart. You get into figure sculpts. You got Bill Merkline and Mike Good. It's an hour at 11, right? Once the figure sculpts are done, we got to get all the molds made, and we got to get resin casts of these things. That's what we're using to make the paint masters. So that's number 12. Shout out to my boy Scott at Lightbeam 3D. He's amazing. He works with Hasbro. He works with everybody. Then you got paint masters. This is where Matthew LaCroix and Chris Scott come in. We've got to count both of them. So that's 14 people. Then you get into package design, and that's Ed Morrill's son, Sean Morrill, that's helping me with that. That's 15 people.
So you're at 15 professionals.
And in addition to that, just volunteer staff, like the people I was talking about with the color studies and the concept creators, it's dozens and dozens.
You could say like three more, Chad, David, and Scott, were the three that jumped in and helped that weren't already on your 15 list.
All that color study stuff. Throw me in there, that's 20. So yeah, we've had a professional force of 20 people throwing muscle power at this, in addition to dozens that are just like adding ideas on a regular basis. The Operation Recall Board.
For me, I've always been really intentional when I talk to all these guys that I'm not one of them. I'm not one of you guys. I am just the guy with a mic and who can communicate for Alexander.
Yeah, but honestly, you would be the marketing professional of the team. Like, seriously.
Sure. but it's been an honor to be involved so that I can feed this information back to A, but also just because, like, holy crap, who doesn't want to be involved, right?
Yeah, it's just good fun. Like every day when something comes in, it makes my day.
Because you're so transparent, I'm assuming as the paint masters start rolling, your Kickstarter emails are going to start showing them.
I'm on the fence about whether I... Honestly, there's only like, what, 6 weeks until Joe Fest? 7 weeks until Joe Fest?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to hold until Joe Fest to show the paint masters. Well, and I'll certainly share it, you know, through the backer kit and through the Kickstarter at that point. But I think it would be really exciting. I think it would generate some buzz because they are so impressive in person at that scale of 2 up. I think I'm going to hold the paint masters until Joe Fest. And I think what I'm going to do is show off every paint master I can at Joe Fest. But I'm also going to do a follow-up series of trading cards that shows all the presentation artwork and the final line art. So if you remember last year, we did the trading cards that were in black and white with the ideation. And so this year will be the trading cards in full color with the presentation art.
So that's just another reason to show up to Joe Fest. Last year at Joe Fest, you had the concept art, you had some of the colors, and you had some of the 3D printed weapons and equipment as it was coming out.
Last year at Joe Fest, we had all the final line art, if I remember correctly, kind of like the final designs for the figures.
Correct.
And we had the dossiers. So I believe I printed the final line art and the dossiers and had all those on display so you could get a sense for the whole line. But in addition to that, yes, we had a bunch of color studies. Mark Pennington brought me a ton of color studies to Joe Fest last year. So where we're at this year, all line art is done. All color studies are done. All presentation artwork is done. All figure sculpts are done. All accessory prints are done, right? So you're going to see all that. And then in addition to that, you're going to see some paint masters and some package paintings. I've already got 7 package paintings, and you have to see these things in hand to appreciate the level of detail that Doug Hart is putting into the package paintings. So I'm going to show off all the presentation artwork. Again, the trading card set this year will be full color presentation artwork by Mark Pennington and Ron Rudat. That's what the trading card set will be this year. And then next year, it'll probably be the final package product on one side and the package painting from Doug Hart on the other side. So we'll probably have the trading cards in 3 years, like three separate stages. So I'll be showing 7 or 8 paintings, and I'll be showing probably 7 or 8 paint master figures. And those don't necessarily line up, right? It's not wave 1 and wave 2. All paint masters, wave 1 and wave 2, all paintings, because that's just not the way it's shaken out. We might be revising some sculpting in the first 2 waves, whereas the sculpting was done on the last 2 waves. So you might see paint masters. You will see paint masters for General Mortifero, Lilith, Salty Dog, and they're later figures, right? But their sculpts were just ready to go.
I think there's something really compelling about seeing all of this in person. It's the modern equivalent of walking into a D-class booth.
Yeah, it is, because this is the way they did it back then. Seeing it up at 2-up scale is just a whole different ball game. It's like seeing original comic book art as opposed to a published comic book. You know how impressive those 11 by 17 pages are, the level of detail and the appreciation you have for the craft, you know, the craftsmanship, the artists behind it. It's a whole different ball game than just looking at a printed comic page.
One of my favorite things with seeing original comic book pages at the 11 by 17 is when you see like the eraser marks and you see the whiteout strips and the paste overs and the tape downs, all the artifacts that showed that they never intended for this to be perfect out the gate. It's intended to be edited and worked on.
It's a human artifact. It's crafted. It's handmade. It's got imperfections. But yeah, in the same way that you'll see the artisan, you know, nature, the craftsmanship of the artist behind the work on an original sheet of comic paper, you know, art, you'll see the same thing when you look at one of these gray bucks that then has the plumber seal epoxy hand sculpted on top of it. Like that's the exact same as seeing like the whiteout strips and the eraser lines and all that good stuff you were mentioning with the comic art. You appreciate that this was made by human hands, like in real time, not on some computer in ZBrush. It's just a totally different approach.
Yeah. I like seeing the ZBrush stuff, but ZBrush stuff, because by the time you see it, you can't see all the control Zs or command Zs. So you get to see where it is at that snapshot, which is lovely. And you can see with various snapshots the process. But with a two-up, with a hand-sculpted buck, you're right. You get to see all of it right there. There's no hiding. And it's a great reminder to all of us that nothing is born perfect.
Oh, absolutely.
It is a process, step by step by step. Callsign and Skeletron have been very, very good and very intentional of showing parts of their process.
Mm-hmm.
You with Operation Recall are also part of that same philosophy.
I just enjoy it too much. I want to share it.
But the process is also a little different. So there's different things that you get to show that they can't. They get to be able to show certain things that you're unable. But between you guys, it really is a great way to look at a brand, look at a line, and before we ever get our hands on it, building that story and that excitement, that love of each piece. And, you know, nothing ends where it starts. Sh is a great example of that. He was an all-black ninja with hook swords.
Yes.
And now he is an urban camo ninja with a forearm blade that is very futuristic. Nothing remains the same. You know, he got a cape and a hood versus what could have been a very simple figure, a very simple project. Simple wasn't enough. And you guys went the full nine to see, here's the simple, but here's also how far we can push it. Okay, we've pushed it too far. Now let's pull it back. Well,
that's right.
We pulled it back too far. Let's push it forward a little more.
It's always a compromise for the various creatives involved. You know, with in specific, Mark Pennington is an archery fan. And he really wanted the chance to do another compound bow. You know, he did Storm Shadow version 2. He also did Snake Eyes version 3 for Hasbro. And he just wanted to get another compound bow, another shot at a compound bow wielding Silent Assassin. And so, you know, the big forearm blade, the compound bow, those things are just, you know, additions from Mark Pennington pursuing things that he thinks is cool. You know, it wasn't just we're not going to handcuff any of these guys with the original concepts. Alexander's original concept was awesome. And it really sold the team on it. They were like, oh, man, a guy with a prosthetic leg that makes him better at his job. Let's do it.
And it sold it to you by tying it into Rotello. I mean, there was a whole thing.
Yeah. Alexander's file card was very creative in the way that he sold it through.
Larry's file card. When I read that to Alexander, it wasn't Alexander's words. It had nothing to do with what Alexander, but it was Larry, and he lit up. His eyes were saucers. Mine were too, but you know, I'm the adult, so I have to keep it together. He doesn't have to. He can do the backflips. Larry's whole concept of him being part of one military force that comes over and works with another who is a sniper, but also an up close combatant, you know, it gave so many pieces there that whether we use the equipment
yep.
from other OR people, from G.I. Joe, from other modern O-ring lines. We go and buy something off eBay. We can kit him out in three dozen different ways, and it all fits what Larry put together. And then we leave him stock standard with what Kirk and Mark put together, and he's still perfect.
You got it. The sum is greater than all the parts, you know? Everybody has to have the opportunity to improve upon the concept. Yeah, I actually just had to pull up his dossier and refresh myself on it because it's been a while since I looked at it. And yeah, Larry just does a job of making someone seem real world in a paragraph.
Yeah.
You know, he just look at how much history he laid out in just one paragraph there before you get to the quote. I mean, this is like four sentences, and yet you feel like it's this whole guy's career. You know, it's just amazing. Larry, that guy, you know, I think he's going places. He's got the ability to humanize and make real a piece of plastic within like four or five sentences. It's amazing. It's magic still.
It's funny because for a guy who worked in superheroes for so long, his Joes seem larger than life because they're supposed to be, but there's nuance to them. They're not supermen. And he's applied that same thing plus an extra 40 years of experience and skill and expertise to your project. You know, I can read his file card daily and fall in love every time, but I've also taken the time to read everybody else's file cards, and isn't a one-off. He's not unique. He is one of 19 that are all applied in that same fashion.
It's like when we were looking at the Breacher head sculpt last night.
Oh my God.
It's like, what baseball cap is he wearing? It's like, yeah, that's a valid question. We should ask that because I wear a lot of baseball caps and every one of them means something special to me. It's either Muir Woods Forest out in California, my favorite like national park, or it's like the Duke Blue Devils who I used to work there and I grew up cheering for that team, you know, or it's Operation Recall, or it's like the Sky Striker logo that I got from Ron and then rebuilt an Illustrator and then made a hat from it. Like every hat I wear like has some kind of personal meaning to me. And so for Breacher, when he asked that question, I was like, yeah, it's gotta have some personal meaning to him. So I went to Larry's file card. I was like, oh, okay, he used to work for this SWAT team in Texas. So then I go look up that SWAT team. I'm like, oh, they got a really cool like bull with these giant horns logo. Let's just have Mike sculpt that onto the hat. It's buying in to a world and then at every turn doing what you can to reinforce the story of that world. You know, to like flesh it out a little more.
I didn't intend for this conversation to just be the two of us gushing over this project, but more of like, hey, what's been going on with it? But I like that it's become us just gushing over it because this is a recorded example of what the concept creator, writer's room, boardroom, this is what it feels like.
It does.
Because Ian will say something and Gabriel the younger will pitch in, and then 6 hours later when we're all asleep and Gabriel the elder wakes up, he'll throw something in. And then Scott shows up and says something really insightful, and then Joe jumps in, and I mean, just everybody piles on.
And don't forget David, man. David's contributed some dimes to this.
Well, I mean, that's I can't mention everyone, but I'm just kind of like,
yeah, of course,
just
of course.
Kind of giving sort of the example of the flow, because you're right, like David's constantly in there. I show up and I'm like, all right, I started reading, but you guys are going too fast. Have you guys thought about this? And somebody's like, yeah, we talked about that 4 days ago. Some of the photos I'm showing Alexander aren't even from you. They're from Ian's custom 12-inch collection.
Yeah.
Any one of the artists that are in that group will make a piece of art.
Yeah, and they're always sharing their art in there, which is amazing.
Yeah, and then sometimes they're just sharing like life stuff. It's not even about the toys, and it's just become a family.
I agree with that.
That works really well.
It gives me comfort, and it also gives me a lot of ideas. You know what I mean? So when we started brainstorming these still to be disclosed and currently, you know, redacted surprise characters that may or may not be coming to the line.
Yeah.
That's such an exciting thing. That had been offered to me a while back. And I was like, do I want to do that? Do I want to bring that into this line? Or should we just keep it totally fresh and not, you know, no legacies of the past, that kind of thing. And then talking with the writer's room, a few days ago, and we just started spitballing, man. Before I knew it, I was sold. I was like, God, we gotta make that happen. That is amazing. You know, it's just the quick writer's room brainstorming.
They found your weak spot.
Because once I have the story, once you have me bought into the story, I want to make that person exist. I want to make that character, those two characters in this case, I want to make them exist. You know, and really desiring to make something happen is a powerful thing. So I'm confident about that. We won't discuss or announce that yet.
Well, I don't also think you've announced the names of the Operation Recall good guy or bad guy teams either.
Nope. I have not. We've known this naming convention for, I think, at least a year. Joe and I, these are the conversations that Joe and I have had in the background. And we've got our good guy force and we've got our bad guy force or forces. And we're actually working on, you know, in terms of project updates, this is relevant. We're working with Ron Rudat right now to create the iconography for both of those groups. So if you think of Cobra having the Cobra sigil designed by Ron Rudat, G.I. Joe didn't have an icon. They had a typeset, right? The G.I. Joe logo with the action stripes. That's not an icon.
But Ron did do the Sky Striker icon.
He did. He did tons of icons for tons of decal sheets, right? If you look at the wolf, the G.I. Joe wolf or the dragonfly, the night raven, he did a lot of decal sheet iconography. He also did all the patches on all the figures. So if you look at any of the figures and they have iconography on their patches from 82 to 86, that's all Ron. He's an amazing icon designer.
Yes, he is.
I'm working with him right now on the iconography for the good guys and the bad guys. And it's going great. And he's the most humble guy. You know, he'll give me like a dozen ideas. And he'll be like, I don't know. It kind of sucks because of X, Y, and Z. But that's every creative, no matter how accomplished they are. They have this like imposter syndrome where they feel like everything that they work on sucks and they're not any good. But I think it's what drives them to be great because they're not full of themselves. They keep pushing and they keep trying to do their best work. So I'm working with Ron on the iconography for those two groups right now. It's very exciting.
I'm looking forward to seeing it. I'm looking forward to seeing people cosplay. I'm looking forward to seeing more fan art.
Yep.
Years ago, somebody told me that the difference between an amateur and a professional was the professional is thinks their work sucks just as much, but they ship it.
Yeah. The difference I've heard between an amateur and a professional is that an amateur just has not yet sold their soul.
There you go. Having Ron do the icon that I didn't know before just now, and that fills me with a lot of joy.
Ron Rudat, if he was not a figure designer at Hasbro during his prime, could have easily been a graphic designer.
Will we be seeing the forces' names and the iconography at Joe Fest as well, or is that maybe a little further down the road for us?
I would love to have it ready by then, but my managerial strategy for this entire project is to not rush the greats, right? So Ron Rudat has already shared rough drafts with me. We're, what, 6 weeks out from Joe Fest? We may or may not see polished concept iconography at the show. I would love to go ahead and break that news and tell you guys all about it, because what I'm planning to do at Joe Fest, here's an announcement. I'm planning on two panels. We're planning on bringing Mark Pennington and Doug Hart to Joe Fest. That's our two big representatives for Operation Recall at Joe Fest. Now, and we plan to do more in 2025 because we'll have a hell of a lot more to show in 2025. Like, the line better be done in 2025 is what I'm telling us. That line needs to be done. We need to be talking about year two, which actually we've already got a lot of things in the works for year two. Those who have been watching social media, when you see extra heads and stuff, extra arms and stuff on certain characters, that's year two designs, right? So we're already, as we're going through this creative process, planning for year two. But by Joe Fest 2025, I want to have all products done, all products in hand, and be well down the road to year two. Joe Fest 2024 is going to be a chance to show off a bunch of paint masters for a bunch of finished figures, a bunch of paintings that are done by Doug Hart, all the sculptures for all the figures, all the accessories for all the figures. We're going to have a lot to show, but we're not quite to the final goalpost yet. So for Joe Fest 2024, I want to have two panels. The first panel is going to be a collaboration between RoboSkull and Callsign Longbow and Operation Recall presenting the art of Doug Hart. So We've already created the graphic for it. It's really cool. It's bookended with G.I. Joe art. And then you've got those three lines showing art that he's created in the last couple of years for us. Doug Hart has had an artistic resurgence in the last couple of years with all these O-ring lines giving him work. And I'm really proud of that. I'm really proud of that, man, because that did start with Rotello. And you know, Operation Recall blossomed out of that. RoboSkull was already doing the retro figures. They hired him to do work for him. Obviously, Call Sign Longbow saw it and was like, yeah, this is perfect with the vintage feel that we're going for. So they've commissioned Doug to do all their paintings as well. So Doug is just on fire right now. And he's like so happy and creatively like plugged in right now. It's really great. I went up and saw him a few weeks ago and picked up another 7 paintings. And he's just so happy, man. He's happy to be doing what he loves. If you watch the interview with him on that Digipack, the last little bit of the interview is like bittersweet, man, because we just finished Rotello and he was sad it was over. And he said he just wished it could continue. So you got to take that in the context of when it was filmed. That was before he got plugged in with RoboSkull and Call Sign Longbow and before Operation Recall started doing the other 18 figures. So this dude is living his dream right now, and it's amazing. So we're going to be bringing Doug. We're going to have a panel with him. We're going to talk about all the fun stuff we've been doing with him lately. And then the second panel is going to be the Operation Recall, like open table reading of the first 8 issues. We're just going to read you the story. And then, like all things Operation Recall, we're going to take your feedback on it. So this is before we hire the writers and the editors and the illustrators and we spend $20,000 an issue. You guys are going to have the opportunity to hear what we think is the Operation Recall story at this point. And then you get to give us your feedback and any good ideas that you have on top of it. So it's kind of like what we've had going on in the Facebook group with the year one guys continuously contributing ideas. I wanted to broaden that to the community. And so this is our approach to doing that. We're going to host a panel. We're going to read the 8 issues with you. And then we're going to take your feedback on what you think is amazing. How might you make it better? It's all about community engagement. So I definitely want to be able to tell you who the good guys are and who the bad guys are during that panel. I think we have to. I don't think we can keep that card tucked away any longer.
Well, if you're reading the story, it'll come up.
It has to. I don't want us to have to self-censor in a way to keep that secretive. So yeah, if you want to know who the good guys are and who the bad guys are, come to the table reading.
So full cast is what I heard. Voice actors, dance troupe.
Probably just me and Joe.
DJ, scratching. No, but I mean, that's going to be a lot of fun. One, the Doug Hart panel sounds amazing. And to be able to meet Doug Hart is going to be great because, you know, I consider Ron and Jenny friends, but I really don't know Kirk. And although I've met him and I've met Larry, I wouldn't say I know Larry, right? But I've never met Doug. When you mentioned your Digipack and I don't remember what you call it, but your creator bios on 3D Joe's with the omnibus book, you still have a DVD coming, and with Operation Recall, you have a DVD coming.
That's right.
And both of these things are, I mean, it's a showcase of what you do built on what you love.
Exactly. It's plugging my professional skill set into my passion, my hobby.
I could not be more excited for these. And when you shipped out the books and you said, hey, here comes the books, I didn't want to wait on the DVD that's coming later.
Just to go ahead and level set expectations here, we grew it from 2 DVDs and 2 Blu-rays to just 4 Blu-rays because it allowed us to take it from, I think, 4 hours of content was going to be our limit to 10. You're getting 10 hours of content. 8 of that is brand new interviews that were, you know, recorded over the last 4 or 5 years as we were working on the omnibus. So 8 hours of all new content, and then a couple hours of some of our greatest hits, the panels we've done with Kirk Bezygi and Larry Hama and so on and so forth. So you're going to get 10 hours worth of Blu-ray HD content. It's typical 3D Joe's style, man. We just keep scope creeping is what we call it in business. Scope creep. Yes. I'm guilty of scope creep every time. So yeah, you might have some delays, but I'm going to like over deliver exponentially.
I wasn't bagging on any delays. I just meant, when you said that it was gonna come after, my initial thought was, oh shit, we're getting the heat.
Yeah, you're getting the heat, man. I'm leaving nothing on the cutting room floor, man. And I sent it to Hasbro all 8 new hours and also sent them links to the previous panels that have already been online. And they sat on it for like 3 weeks. I think I might have overwhelmed them with the content. And then they just said, okay, yeah, it's approved. Go ahead. Like, really? No changes? No revisions? Nothing? It's great. I couldn't be happier, man. I couldn't be happier. So,
and that's just the omnibus. That's not even Operation Recall.
That's just the omnibus videos. That's right. Because like I was saying, filming with Bill Merkline 2 weeks doing Rotello, none of that stuff's in there. The only stuff that's in the Bill Merkline interview that's on the Art of G.I. Joe DVD is us going through his portfolio and talking about the decades of work that he did for other brands and Hasbro. That's it.
Gorgeous.
You're not going to get him hand sculpting Rotello on the Art of G.I. Joe Digipack. That wouldn't make any sense, right? You got to break that off. So the Art of G.I. Joe Digipack is purely the creatives and talking about their careers, both outside of Hasbro and inside of Hasbro. Anything that's recall related, we're saving that for later, saving that for the recall disc. So there's going to be a great book that's going to show the process of action figure design for how we created all these figures. And then you're going to get a disc which shows how we made Rotello. Like the behind the scenes, like you're sitting in Ron Rudat's studio with him while he's hunched over his table creating art, or you're sitting at Bill Merkline's table while he's, you know, putting plumber seal epoxy on this buck. It's going to be great, man. Everybody's going to enjoy it.
That's fantastic. I could not be more excited about that.
Me too, man. Me too. I got my work cut out for me. Still got a lot of editing to do on that one.
We've rambled for a bit, and really it's just been a chance for me to sort of celebrate.
I love it, man. I love your approach, man. There's got to be something in life that you enjoy and that makes you happy. Why not amplify that? Why not put your energy into that and make the world a better place?
Let's end it here. Thanks again for spending time with us discussing toys and other geeky things. Our logo was made by Rhino. The music we use was created by Self Help. You can find Joel on Instagram at Order of Battle Pod. Jason is on Twitter at Order of Battle PD. Our email is orderofbattlepod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and thank you for your likes, comments, outreaches, and just being here with us.
Well, to me, the ending would be what I was saying about come to Joe Fest, see the paintings, see the paint masters, participate in the panel and help shape the universe.
I find that very fun that you are like, just everybody come and put your hands in this.
Yeah, come and play, man. It's not just my universe, you know? Come and play, man. Should be fun. Like, I want my 4-year-old daughter to enjoy it. Why do you think we have missile launching turtles in there? You know?
This has been the Order of Battle.